looks like we have some rain showers throughout the day to deal with. Temperatures just really staying stagnant. So 46 for a high and 46 for a low. It'll be tomorrow where the temperatures increase just slightly to a high of 65, mostly cloudy. Thursday night, a low down to 54. And then on Friday, to start the week, and a chance of showers in the early afternoon hours, and then mostly cloudy in the afternoon, evening. Maybe a shower coming through late night. But a high on Friday near 60, a low down to 38. We currently have 37 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the NextTier Bank Studios with WISR 680 AM. Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn, middle of the week. And a brand new month as of today, huh? And boy, Mother Nature is letting us know, too. Is this just an archetypical November day or what? I mean, really. When I think of a November day, I know we can get snow in November, and certainly by the latter part, but when I think of a classic November day, I think of this. It's dark, even in the middle of the day. It's wet. It's chilly. It's cold. And man, that's what we have in spades. Now, you know, we've lived through this forever, so it's no big deal. But it's still quite a shock when it comes around every year. By the way, yesterday was pretty much like that, too. We are finally going to break out of the cold snap. It's been about a week now. A little over a week, actually, that we've had these chilly temperatures. And we're going to break out of that at least for a while, starting tomorrow. Not going to be real pretty, though. Do not put your umbrella away, that's for sure. And you certainly need it today. You know, the rain didn't start. I don't know what time you get up. When I came to work, it was bone dry. Hadn't started to rain yet. Around 6 o'clock, 5:45, we started to get a little mist here in the Butler area, and then the next thing you know, it was raining. And some folks north of Butler had a little bit of white stuff today. Didn't accumulate, didn't amount to much, and it pretty quickly changed over to chilly rain everywhere. But we were down to the freezing mark early on. Yeah. November. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of holidays coming up and a lot of good stuff in November, so you got to look toward the positive, right? Including Veterans Day, which is just around the corner now. Of course, next week we'll have Election Day. Less than a week away now. It's next Tuesday. And by the way, we will have our final two candidate chats here on the It's Your Turn program today. I'll tell you about that in just a sec. But right after Election Day, a couple of days later, it's Veterans Day. Now, Veterans Day is November 11th. Congress tried to move it many years ago, but veterans groups rose up in rebellion and said, put it back where it belongs, November 11th. So that turns out to be a Saturday this year. So we will have some special programming for you in the days leading up to Thursday, and certainly Friday of next week. Have some special programming that will relate to Veterans Day. So, as we said on the program today, if you've been with us thus far this week, we have been talking with all of the candidates either seeking to be a member of Butler City Council or to be mayor of the city of Butler. And we have two candidates that we've not heard from yet. We will today. Just a couple of minutes, we'll hear from Ben Smith. Benjamin Smith is the way his name appears on the ballot, I believe. Ben is a candidate for mayor in the city of Butler, Election Day. And we will also hear today from Kenneth Bonus, who is a candidate for city council. So we'll hear from both of them. And that'll wrap it up because we've heard from everybody else already this week. We decided to break it up. A little too much maybe to have, you know, all the candidates at one time, you know. So we broke it up over a three-day period. Coming up later on the program today, we do hope you can stay with us because we're going to be talking about a French playwright who saved the American Revolution. And I'm sure you've heard of him. Monsieur de Beaumarchais, right? Yeah, I don't think so. Our engineer, Pat Parker, is shaking his head. I don't think anybody's heard of this guy. But we'll talk about it with the guest, Harlow Unger, who'll be visiting with us a little bit later today. I got a little American history lesson. Have you heard of him? Beaumarchais? No. Didn't think so. That's coming up later on the program today. We have plenty of time for open talk later this week, tomorrow, and again on Friday, so we can discuss happenings around the world, in Washington, D.C., and in New York. Obviously, great tragedy yesterday with another terrorist attack. 8 people dead, and many others injured, some seriously. The death toll was still at 8, the last I heard. And they were all mostly pronounced dead either during the incident yesterday or shortly thereafter. So we can talk about that. Is there anything that can be done about it? I don't know. That's tough. Any of these things where one lone individual decides to do something horrific like this, whether it's drive a truck down a bicycle lane or take an arsenal of high-powered assault rifles up to the 30th floor of a hotel in Las Vegas and start shooting. One guy, what can you do? Well, we'll talk about it. And we'll have some guests also as we move through the last couple of days of the week. But we wanted to line up what's going to happen today. So I'll tell you what, we'll take a quick break here. And then when we return, we'll listen to our interview with Ben Smith, first of our candidate chats here on the It's Your Turn program on a Wednesday. And we'll be back right after these words.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Listeners, we continue here on WISR and specifically on the It's Your Turn program. My name is Dave Malarkey. We continue with our candidate chats. And for this coming November election, we're chatting with all of the candidates who seek to be either a member of Butler City Council or the mayor of the city of Butler. And on this segment, we're going to be chatting with mayoral candidate Ben Smith. Mr. Ben Smith, good to have you here. Nice to be with you.
Thanks
nice
for having me, Dave. Yeah. Appreciate it.
I run our candidate chats the same way. A lot of people will know you. A lot of people may not.
Sure.
So maybe you can take just a minute or so and tell people who you are.
Sure. I'm Ben Smith. I live here in the city. My wife and I own a home. We have 2 small kids. I own Reclamation Brewing Company on Main Street, and we're actually opening another business soon here. It'll be a cigar bar and speakeasy. That'll be just down the street from Reclamation. So I've been in the city for a few years. I have a master's in higher education. I have an undergraduate in business, so a bachelor's of business administration, and did some focusing on finance and marketing and management and stuff like that when I was in college. So obviously that's a little while ago, but still I think it's relevant.
Well, let's go right down to business here, and I ask all candidates this question. What do you see as your priorities if you're elected mayor of the city of Butler? What would be your top priorities going into your first term, your first year of your first term?
Sure. Yeah, I think that our city's budget is one huge area that needs to be addressed. And, you know, sometimes I think we're able to make it look like it's balanced, but it's not. And we've got far more going out than we have coming in. And so figuring out creative ways to not only bring in additional revenue, but also cut expenses that doesn't actually dramatically impact the lives of our citizens. So, you know, there's not going to be huge pockets of money that can just be easily done away with, or I'm sure the people in place would have done that already. Mm-hmm. Well, certainly you would hope they would do that. But there are a lot of different small things that don't add up when you look at the numbers, and certain things that could easily be tweaked a little bit to maybe have an expenditure here or there that would go away or be brought into the same thing. And so then you look at, also, you need to look at departments, figure out how those departments are working, figure out if they're working, and do that from an insider's perspective. You know, I've had tons of meetings and obviously observations, and you meet with staff and stuff like that. And there's only so much you can gain from an outsider's perspective. So part of that is being on the ground in the office, actually getting a glimpse of how the inner workings go and making decisions based on that. And so it may be, you know, that people just need a little bit of guidance, or they need to be plugged in with somebody else who can help them for that department to function well. You may need to add positions. You may need to decrease positions. So it really is just a matter of looking at that objectively and running it, well, I think almost like a business, where, you know, if I walk into my business and see that I have X amount of employees doing Y amount of work, well, we don't need the additional, or we do need additional employees based on that. So basically my idea is, just once you get in there, you can observe so much from the outside and come in with your ideas, but until you get in there and actually actively assess the problem as it's happening, and or the strengths, not just the problems, you don't really know exactly how things are proceeding and need to proceed.
Are there ways that the city of Butler could increase its revenue without necessarily raising taxes? In fact, it's my understanding the city is up against its limit of taxes anyway. But how what are some of the ways that you could see to raise revenue?
Right. So, I mean, the city can't raise taxes, and even if it could, it's not a good option. It's an option I'm very much against. So the main way to build that is to build business and home ownership, and so bringing more people into the city. And I mean, you do get some impact financially from people who work in the city, but it's not near as great as homeowners, and additionally the business taxes as well. So actively recruiting businesses and homeowners and putting programs in place for them to be able to afford to be in the city, to be able to make improvements on their households, which will eventually get more tax dollars, but giving them a way to not have to pay all that up front. Those are good options as far as that goes. And so we actually do have some of those programs in place. It's just a matter that, and I certainly think they need to be expanded, but we have some of those programs in place that there are many, I know specifically businesses, that were not aware of them even after they opened. And so you can imagine that if you just had someone who was willing to say, who was able to say, who it was their job to say, hey, this is how you open a business in the city, this is exactly what needs to be done, we'll help guide you through, not hold your hand, but, you know, if you have questions, we'll be receptive to those questions. And then, oh, by the way, here's a tax abatement or that you can apply for the next 5 years, and, you know, it's a sliding scale. So those are some ways. And then there are lots of little ways that the city can make more money, I think, as well. It's not a lot of money, but, like, simply emphasizing the permits and stuff like that for the park, you know, it's a few dollars here and there. It's not going to change the world overnight or anything, but it certainly helps get along the way. The different departments are able to perform inspections and have those increase the desirableness of our neighborhood and our business infrastructure, and just giving them a way to get in and do those inspections and putting things in place so that those are all above board makes our city more desirable and helps bring more people in as well.
Butler's not unique in facing a loss of tax base. In fact, this has happened all over the country over the past 25 or 30 years. To the degree that some state governments and even federal governments have realized this and have made programs available. Are there grants or low-interest loans that could help out somehow?
Sure, there are lots of grants that can be applied for, and I'm sure there are loans. I don't think Butler's in any position to be borrowing more money than we have already and that we will continue to do, I'm sure, for certain necessities. But there are certainly grants that could be applied for through a variety of means. So there are some grants currently being applied for, and I think that program needs to be expanded. Part of my ambition is to be able to hire a city manager. And that wouldn't necessarily be a new job. It may be a job that's expanded, a description that's, you know, a little bit expanded, maybe the pay increased a little bit, that is experienced in grant writing. And so they would essentially take the position of writing grants for the city as well as managing the city in a lot of ways that would help bring increased income to the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are many municipalities who have a manager mm-hmm. these days, day-to-day operations,
right.
Full-time. We're talking, for listeners who may have joined us midstream, which happens a lot, especially with people listening to the radio in the car. We're talking with Ben Smith. He is a candidate for mayor of the city of Butler in the upcoming November election, and this is part of our candidate chat series. You mentioned you don't see the city borrowing any more money. The city's bond rating has been downgraded for the second time this year,
right.
Recently by Standard & Poor's, S&P. It's my understanding, though, that that's tied in with the completion of the Center City Hotel,
right.
That there'll be a repayment of some state money, and that should clear the decks here.
That's my understanding as well, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, that bond rating is certainly not a good thing to have on our records, of course, but really what that impacts is us being able to borrow more money in the future. We're not really at a position where we need to borrow money, or where we should borrow money. We should be living within our means and increasing our means if necessary. But yeah, my understanding is that once the hotel is complete, the city will get that money back through a grant program, and that may increase the bond. It may not, because some of the other reasonings for that are actually a lack of planning, and that was stated in the whenever the bond rating was lowered, it was stated that it was for a lack of planning. And you know, unless we get a plan in place, we're not going to be able to approve ourselves to those outside entities.
Along those lines, are there some concerns in your mind about the condition of the city's vehicle fleet? And I speak not only of police cruisers, but street department, parks department vehicles, trucks, fire apparatus.
Sure.
We seem to have had a lot of it reach critical mass here in recent months.
Right. Yeah, and that's one of the problems. I mean, those vehicles all, no matter what department they're in, they're service vehicles, so they're taking a beating, and you know, they're more than your 9-to-5 job car that you're driving around. But and I think most people understand that. Part of the problem, I think, is planning, and it's you know, you have to have a plan in place to be able to replace those vehicles in a certain amount of time. You also certainly have to take care of them, and I think that's being done pretty well. Our departments seem to do a good job of taking care of their vehicles, but I know in the past we've had some maintenance budget that was actually, you know, returned that could have been saved for a future year for maintenance, or you know, basically we had money that was in the budget for these repairs that weren't necessary for years, and then once they become necessary to, you know, kind of at a head, it looks like a lot larger amount than was budgeted for. And it is a lot larger amount than was budgeted for in some cases, but with a little bit of planning, I think that can go a long way. And then looking at creative solutions, you know, we've looked at, the city has looked at some options as far as leasing vehicles, and I don't know that there's exactly a perfect scenario with that, but those kind of options need to be explored to have a company that basically, you know, basically leases the vehicles to the city and maintains them, and that cuts down a lot of cost, even though there's a larger monthly cost, but it doesn't, you don't incur some of the other costs that happen.
A lot of people talk about what they see as a real drug problem in the city. There's no question about that, but I think more and more people are realizing now that this is not unique to Butler. It's not unique to cities. In fact, within the past couple of months, we've had some programs here in Butler County indicating that this is now a problem in rural areas.
Sure.
We've had, within the past year, the governor and the state legislature increasing the funds available for the opioid crisis. And now the federal government is getting involved, too, making a declaration of crisis. So my question is, apart from cooperating with the drug task force, I mean, is there anything that city government can do here, or let the other agencies, the other levels of government go to work?
Well, I certainly don't think we need to sit back and let someone else do the work. So, I mean, there are certainly things that they can do better than we, because they have more resources, but there are ways that we can be involved and seeing that happen on the law enforcement side. But aside from that, I think that if you look at models of cities that have had very bad drug problems and very bad crime rates and stuff like that, the thing that brought them back from those levels was prosperity in the city. And so if you have a city that is essentially poor, if you have a city that's poor, you're going to have the things that desperate people end up finding. And that includes, you know, the opioid crisis. That includes crime of different types. So don't get me wrong, there are certainly wealthy people who are addicted to heroin or whatever the case is. But when you provide a haven, essentially, by allowing certain types of structures to exist, certain types of lifestyles to exist within the city, you really start to see those problems be exacerbated. So cleaning up the city, making certain that properties are maintained, properties with repeat offenders being essentially punished for those repeat, you know, tenants and stuff like that. When you start really cracking down on those items, you start seeing a newer clientele move in, and through a bit of a revival almost, it becomes new almost overnight. And by overnight, I certainly don't mean in 4 years. Mm-hmm. But you look at a city like, I've mentioned this before, but over the Rhine, just outside of Cincinnati, and that was one of the scariest places in the country. I think multiple magazines named it like the number one place to get shot. And they went in and basically did what I'm saying. They started in putting stricter codes in place. They started enforcing those codes and the codes that were already on the books. They started driving people out based on, if you're a drug dealer, we're going to make sure you're never allowed in the city again. And in the matter of 5 or 7 years, it's like hipster paradise. I mean, it's really a booming area. And you see those kinds of examples all over the country. Now, certainly, we see more examples of places like Butler where we're in the opposite situation and we need to get on that path to recovery.
One final question here before we wrap up. Are you a supporter of renovation projects? For example, the Penn Theater, there's a private group that's seeking to obtain control and renovate that as a live concert venue. Do you see this as an advantage to the city?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think that the city needs to be supportive of that. They need to be able to provide resources. I don't think it needs to be a monetary resource. I think the city needs to reserve that and pay for other things that are necessary. So I don't think the city needs to be involved financially, but I certainly think that, you know, having something like the Penn Theater or the Penn Theater itself come into town provides a destination point, because, you know, we're already seeing a lot of different unique shops and services pop up in our business district. We're seeing a lot of restaurants come about in our business district. We are looking at a hotel going into the center city. You know, that's, regardless of your opinion before, now, or later, the hotel will be there, and it's going to be a nice hotel. So we'll have people who will come to stay, and, you know, imagine you go somewhere to stay because of maybe you have a conference, and then afterwards you go out to dinner and you see a movie or you go to a show or something like that. And I think having an entertainment venue of any type, let alone a historic entertainment venue, is a real asset to the city.
We're talking and we're wrapping up. We end our candidate chats always in the same way. We give a candidate a minute or two, whatever, to kind of summarize and, in so many words, Ben Smith, who's a candidate for mayor of the city of Butler in the coming November election, why do you think people, when they go to the polls, should consider voting for you for mayor?
Sure. Well, I appreciate you having me on, Dave. And I think that, you know, I am the best choice for mayor simply because I have the business experience that the city needs. The city needs to be run like a business in a lot of aspects, at least especially as far as the budget goes. I have experience with management. I've been in my short career between the different colleges I worked at and my own business, I've been in charge of dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of employees and hiring and unfortunately firing sometimes. So I think I have the management skills needed. Now, I'm not saying I know everything, and I'm not saying that I'm going to be perfect at the job, but I certainly have the drive and the passion to do it, and I'm not afraid to ask for an opinion from someone else or take advice from someone else if needed. So I certainly would appreciate your vote, and look forward to seeing you all at the polls on November 7th.
Listeners, he is Ben Smith. He is a candidate for mayor in the city of Butler in the coming November election. Thanks for being here. Good to talk with you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
We have one more candidate chat to go, we started the first of this week on Monday, and we still have to hear from Kenneth Bonus. He's a candidate for Butler City Council, and he will be with us in just a couple of minutes for our final candidate chat. And don't forget, still later on the program today, Improbable Patriot, the story of Monsieur de Beaumarchais, a French playwright who actually was pretty critical in saving the American Revolution. It's an interesting story, not well known. We'll talk with historian Harlow Unger about it a little bit later on the program here today. One of our sponsors, folks, this is going to be one of the greatest businesses going here in the area, most convenient. It's called Goin' Postal Butler. Have you heard about it? Goin' Postal Butler. It's your friendly neighborhood shipping center. So convenient because whenever you've got a package to ship, whether it's one or whether it's six, it's always inconvenient. You need the paper, the wrapping paper, that special tape, the labels and everything. Why not take it to this business, Goin' Postal Butler, and let them do it for you? They package your items for shipping. You can ship them any way you want. FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service, they handle it all. They're located just off Newcastle Road at 140 Shockey Lane. It's right behind King's and Villa Grande. You know the two restaurants there that are right next to each other? Right behind there in the Shockey Mini Storage. Phone number, if you'd like to call them and get more information on their services, 724-841-0044. 724-841-0044. In addition to packaging your items for shipping, Goin' Postal also offers copying, scanning, faxing, mailbox rental service. They have greeting cards, lottery tickets, and an official notary, too. Your friendly neighborhood shipping center, just off Newcastle Road behind King's and Villa Grande, Goin' Postal Butler.
Whether you're a backyard car fixer-upper or an auto repair shop, Milich Auto Wrecking is still the place to go for new and used auto and truck parts. They have been for over 40 years. And compared to factory prices, you'll save big bucks. Milich Auto Wrecking is neatly organized and will tell you immediately if they have the part or not. Open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, it's Milich Auto Wrecking, Route 38, the Oneida Valley Road. Look for the big black and red sign. Stop by or call 287-1001. And yes, old Uncle Fred still goes to Milich.
Listeners, as we have done for many, many years here on WISR and on the It's Your Turn program, good afternoon, by the way. My name is Dave Malarkey. We are doing candidate interviews in advance of the upcoming election, and we're concentrating this year on the candidates who are seeking to serve as mayor or members of council in the city of Butler. And on this segment of the program, we talk with a council candidate, Kenneth Bonus, who is an incumbent, actually, right, Kenneth?
That's correct,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There will be people who know who you are. There will be some listeners who aren't so sure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take a minute or so and talk a little bit about your background and who you are?
Absolutely. My name's Kenneth Bonus. I'm a current member on Butler City Council. I'm a certified public accountant in the city of Butler. I have my own business. I am a lifelong resident of Butler, and I graduated from Butler High School back in 2006. I see Butler as being a great place to raise a family and invest into. I'm a part of multiple organizations, including the Butler AM Rotary, along with other nonprofit organizations. And I just see Butler as a great community that people can come together, know their neighbor, and really work towards the betterment of the community at whole.
Do you have any particular issues that you think City Council will have to address in the coming 4 years, pressing issues that you see as needing a top priority?
Yeah, definitely. And being a CPA, Certified Public Accountant, I think that the budget is one of the biggest aspects of the city that needs to be appropriately addressed. I think that everybody has to be on board with how to proceed from there, helping to bring in top-line revenues and also how to cut spending where it's necessary. I know that a lot of bringing in more revenues involves bringing more families into the city of Butler. That would help to increase the tax base there. And whenever families move in and own their own home, it helps to increase the value of properties because people are really taking ownership of things. I think a lot of things deal with just attracting people into the city.
People who want to be who are stakeholders.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And some of the things, we take little steps towards making neighborhoods better like that. We give away the Neighborhood Pride Award each month during City Council. So we award homeowners or businesses that have taken steps to improve the outside appearance of their property and their houses. And we've been getting pretty good reception with that. It just encourages neighbors and other people within the city to take pride in their homes and know that, hey, there are people looking at that and appreciating the fact that they're willing to invest in their home.
Are you satisfied with the current structure of city government?
In the way of multiple parties coming together, I think that a lot of times the two-party system kind of conflicts and we need to work more together.
My question wasn't very clear. I was kind of looking at a subject that came up in the recent political forums about the possibility of a city manager.
Oh, yeah. In the way of the city manager, I'm a big proponent of something like that as long as we'd be able to find the appropriate funding. That's one of those jobs where it's important for that city manager to understand that they have to be seeking multiple revenue streams for the city and in a way essentially pay for their own salary. I think it would take an upfront investment, but if we could get it to a point where we have a very qualified candidate in that position, they'd be fit to be able to bring in the revenues that would cover their salary and then really do a lot of good for the community.
I'm sorry my question was a little bit unclear. However, you did lead me to another area, and that is the what you obviously see is the need for cooperation among members of council and the mayor's office despite the political affiliation.
Absolutely. A lot of times we get the question of what party we're affiliated with, and what I try to stress is that we're just coming together to work for the betterment of the city as a whole. A lot of those two-sided arguments at the national level don't really apply to this local level, and it's important to realize that we're supposed to be working together in the betterment of the city of Butler and trying to make progress rather than worrying about sides or anything of that nature.
Standard & Poor's recently downgraded the city's bond rating for the second time this year. It's my understanding, I'm not a CPA, it's my understanding that that's tied in with the completion date of the Marriott Spring Hills Suites Hotel. And that once that happens, then the city will be getting money to cover the loan that it guaranteed. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, that's essentially it, where upon completion of the hotel, then the Redevelopment Authority would get the $2 million grant from the state. And right now, the city is the co-signer for the Redevelopment Authority in relation to that $2 million. So upon receiving that, then it would be likely that the bond rating would then increase, but for the time being, it seemed to have pulled the bond rating down. I spoke with Solicitor Colder, and he didn't see there being a major issue with being able to get the $2 million from the state. And then also in the way of talking about the actual bond rating going down, a lot of times that applies to if you would then be going out for debt and trying to obtain debt. And at the current moment, we aren't looking to do that. It would essentially raise the interest rate based on the risk factored in from Standard & Poor. So at the current moment, it's not as big of a deal, but it's still an indicator that we need to be smart with the way we conduct ourselves as a city.
The city has, I don't want to use loaded language here, it's had financial difficulties, let's put it that way, for a number of years. This is not something that's happened in the last few years. It goes back a long ways. In fact, as I recall, quite a few years ago, the city reached its taxing limit and has to actually go to the courts for an increase in basic millage. So does that leave us with a real puzzle here? How do we improve the city's financial situation under those circumstances?
Yeah, it's definitely something that it's taken time to get where we are now, and we need to be diligent and creative to move forward together as a council and as a mayor. Some of the parts that we've been looking to is just focusing more on approvals for spending so that everybody is carefully watching what is spent. A lot of that has to go past Mike Walter, who's the director of finance currently. And it just, that extra little step makes people think a couple times before they make an extra purchase or spend money on something that might not be an absolute necessity. So I think everybody in the city is on notice that we are in financial difficult times, but I think that taking these diligent steps from that end of things is important.
Most cities are, by the way. This is not unique to Butler by any means. It's because of, in some cases, a loss of population, loss of industry. It still amazes me that the city of Butler was able to survive the loss of Pullman Standard, 30-some years ago. That's phenomenal. That number of jobs lost and that tax revenue lost in one fell swoop. It's pretty amazing. So the city's resilient, let's put it that way.
Yeah, we're working on different avenues in order to bring additional funding in. And I speak with people, and within getting into office in my first 2 months, I went up to Berkheimer, the local tax collector, sat with one of the gentlemen in charge over there, and we discovered a way that Butler was able to increase revenues by over $5,000 per year at no additional cost to city taxpayers, and that helped to cover the salary that I would be paid too. So it was nice to find a solution within 2 months to be able to start bringing in some additional revenues. We also looked to Butler Township and other municipalities for ideas on how to go about bringing in more revenues, and we can conduct analysis to figure out whether or not all of the businesses are actually paying their business privilege tax as well. So it's a step-by-step process, but we don't want to be missing out on taxes that should be owed to us as well.
Sometimes you need an outside objective look to realize what other people are thinking about the city of Butler as opposed to just the people who live here. The Pittsburgh, is it the Historical Landmarks Foundation, obviously finds Butler worthy of preservation and renovation. And then there was a group that I had not heard of before, the Young Preservationists of Pittsburgh, who just recently put the Penn Theater as number 2 on their top 10 list of buildings that need to be saved. So outsiders are seeing something of value in the city.
Yeah, absolutely. And anytime we bring in anybody from an outside city or community and they take a look at Butler, they're always amazed by the amazing Main Street that we have and a lot of the different resources that we have. And it's really encouraging because sometimes we don't see the great things that are going on in our backyard. The Young Preservationists, for instance, that you mentioned, the Penn Theater got second place on that. That's something that I had just applied for online at the at the recommendation of Shaylin, who works here at the radio station, and we found out that we got number two out of the Pittsburgh area. So something like that's very encouraging and shows you that, hey, Butler is a great community, and there's a lot of treasures located within Butler that are worth preserving.
Do you think that advanced planning can help with the replacement of the city's vehicle fleet? And I'm talking about not just police cruisers, but streets, parks and streets, fire equipment, and so on.
Yeah, advanced planning for any aspect of the city is critical, and I think in relation to the police vehicles and the fire department vehicle, it would have been nice if this had already been planned for, but we have to take what we've been dealt and move forward in the proper direction. So having a potential lease, revolving leases going forward, where you wouldn't have to pay up the upfront cost of these vehicles all at once, you would pay it over time and get on a revolving basis. So police vehicles would cycle in and out at an appropriate rate. So I think that's absolutely critical if you want to be able to make purchases of high-level things. The lease program is one of the better options.
I've mentioned this with some other candidates, the drug crisis that Butler faces, that we now understand almost all cities and small towns across America face. State and federal government is obviously suddenly recognizing this. They've come up with funding and plans. Police departments, drug task force. Beyond that, is there anything that the council can actually do? I'm not sure there is.
Well, we as a council can encourage people to get education on the topic. I think a lot of people go off of predispositions about the opioid epidemic and make decisions on that. But we really want to encourage people to get educated. I know Candle Inc. has a reality tour that helps to educate young children. So something of that nature is one of the best ways for individuals in the city council to encourage people to understand the issue that is at hand.
Do you remain optimistic about the future of the city of Butler, Kenneth Bonus?
100%. I think Butler City is a fabulous place, worth investing in, worth bringing a family into, and then also just enjoying the great things that we have here in the city. I think Butler is a very unique place, and we're very fortunate to have such a great community that comes together whenever we have times in need.
Members of council serve a 4-year term, correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, before we wrap up here, in case you've joined us midstream a little bit late, and that sometimes happens, especially with people listening to the radio in the car, we've been chatting with Kenneth Bonus. He is a candidate for Butler City Council in the upcoming election. And we always wrap up our candidate chats, giving candidates a couple of minutes to kind of summarize, if they so desire, and specifically make a case, if you will, as to why voters should consider voting for them on Election Day. So, Kenneth Bonus, candidate for Butler City Council.
Much appreciated. And one of the things I just like to remind people is that being a certified public accountant, the city would then have a certified public accountant on their council. I think having that familiarity with finances and accounting is integral to any organization, especially at the municipal city level. So just knowing that, I think that people would want to vote for me in that regard, and I would respectfully ask for that. But one thing I like to remind people is that it's not just the council people who are in their positions. It's all of us in the community as well. I try to seek to show people how they can get involved. So a lot of times you should ask yourself, hey, how can I get involved to help out the community as well? And showing your friends the way as well. So I try to get out there and lead people, to show them opportunities that are there to volunteer and get involved with the community. And when we have the entire community acting in that fashion, then we have a lot more progress rather than five people making decisions at the top. So
one of our candidate chats here on WISR on the It's Your Turn program, candidate for Butler City Council in the coming November election, Kenneth Bonus. Thank you, sir. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there stops here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem. The bus will get you there, 'cause that's what we do.
Hop the bus.
Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. Boy, these people do so many good things for the less fortunate in our area in a number of ways. First of all, they operate a food bank in the Lower Institute Hill area of Butler on Elm Street. They also have a client aid program to assist the needy, sometimes at the end of the month with a heating bill or an electric bill or something. And, of course, they also run their Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store. And all of the proceeds from the operation of that store help to fund the food bank and the client aid program. So if you're cleaning up prior to the holidays, maybe cleaning out the guest bedroom with the folks arriving over the holidays, don't throw stuff away that could be sold at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store. Furniture, knickknacks, clothing, shoes, whatever. And if you have a whole bunch of stuff, call them. They'll come and get it. The thrift store is located in the Greater Butler Mart, Route 8 South of Butler. Very convenient to get to, and free parking, drop-off bins are right inside the front door. Society of St. Vincent de Paul, we stand the tallest when we stoop to help others. We continue on with the It's Your Turn program today, and we welcome, first of all, Carol Leshensky, who's a Senior Vice President at Next Tier. She's here to tell us about the Next Tier Nonprofit Spotlight Agency of the Month. Carol, good to see you.
Good to see you, Dave, and thanks for having me.
Sure.
Yes, we're very excited for November. Our spotlight nonprofit is Life Steps Incorporated, and I can't tell you how honored we are to showcase them throughout our branch network and to just be a partner with them. We've had them every year since we started the Spotlight Nonprofit Program, and I'm sure and I hope it'll continue every year. They just do so much for so many. I mean, you think Life Steps is just in Butler County, but it far exceeds that. I remember Karen Owens, executive director, saying that it was 10 counties, but it's probably even more now. So again, we're very excited, and Cassandra, as you're going to announce her, is here to talk a little bit about what currently is going on at Life Steps.
Karen Kokoski is the director of community relations for Life Steps. Cassandra, good to see you again. Nice to have you back with us.
Nice to see you. Thank you. And thank you so much to Next Year for selecting us again this year for the November Spotlight. We're truly honored.
Well, this is a good time to talk with you because, I mean, just seeing your face, all of a sudden I'm thinking of pancakes and sausages. I don't know what it is.
It's that time of year again.
It's the power of suggestion.
Yes.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Yes. So we do have at Life Steps, as Carol said, we have services that span a generation of care, providing services for children as young as birth up to seniors here in Butler County across western Pennsylvania. So we're an organization that has been around for 90 years, and we've been around for that long because of partners like Next Year Bank that help support us through donations. Like the event we're having next week, the Pancake Festival, is another event that donations go to the Life Steps Family Caring Fund that helps us provide those critical programs and services to people in need.
Well, let's go over the details on that so that nobody misses out on the pancakes. It's Election Day, of course, which is next Tuesday.
Yes.
And you're teaming up with the Rotarians again, right?
Yes, and Next Year Bank is one of our main sponsors, event sponsors for Pancake also. Oh, so great. They're supporting us in yet another way.
Going to be at the same place this year?
Yeah, Tanglewood from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Pancakes, all you can eat. And, of course, those Miller's meat sausage.
Mm-hmm. And, by the way, it's all you can eat. So they're not making any money on me, I'll tell you that. I love pancakes. And it doesn't matter. So I don't usually get there for breakfast because I'm on the air early in the morning, but sometimes a late lunch, sometimes dinner. After you vote, go have pancakes because the hours are exactly the same hours that the polls are open next Tuesday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're up in a good cause. Specifically, where do the funds go from the Pancake Festival?
Yeah, so from Pancake or from the donations, like for the Nonprofit of the Month, they go to what's called the Life Steps Family Caring Fund. Mm-hmm. So that helps programs such as our Child Check program. So Child Check is an amazing program. It's a free program that are developmental and autism screenings for children aged birth to 5 years old. So for a parent or a family member that might notice maybe their child's not rolling over or maybe they're not speaking as often as maybe that developmental milestone says and they're just not sure, it's a chance for them to have a 30-minute free screening where one of our staff will evaluate and determine if that child is maybe meeting those milestones. And if they're not, then we provide resources and connections.
Ever since I heard about this, and Life Steps has been doing this for a long, long time, it's one of the greatest programs and this is even before, you know, we've become very much aware of autism in recent years, probably the last 15 or 20 years at the most. Before that, I don't think anybody had ever heard of it. Now we know, and it's apparently more widely diagnosed these days. But any developmental screening, not just autism, if you determine it early, you have a much better chance of helping that baby, that infant.
Yeah, we know that early identification and early education is vital. That's why at Life Steps we care so much about being able to identify and help lay that foundation for the future. Mm-hmm. The earlier you get resources, the better likelihood they can then maybe not have some symptoms later on and kind of move forward to live their life to the fullest. And that's our goal, no matter it's an early education program or a program for adults with special needs. It's letting them live their life to the fullest.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And these Child Check screenings are free?
Yes, they're free because of next year. They're free because of the folks that donate to us.
Mm-hmm. And the folks who eat pancakes next
Tuesday. Yes, who eat pancakes next Tuesday.
Yeah. Do you still go around to different places and set up the screenings?
That's one of the things I love about the screenings, too. So they're not just based at our Butler Center mm-hmm. or based in one of our counties. That they're out in the community. So it might be a screening house at a library. Or it might be screenings where we partner with a school or a different organization. So we're really trying to get them out there in the community that makes it easier for parents and families to get this free screening.
And folks, you might think, I got a little toddler. How can you test them for vision or hearing or even motor skills? They have people that can do that.
Yes, we have trained professionals. Yeah. I always tell people, if you were looking in on a Child Check, it might look like they're playing, but they're looking for those little signs. Is that child moving their head? Are they rolling over? Are they having any verbalization? Are they following directions? So there's a lot of little minute things that our trained professionals can look at to then help determine if there's a resource that we can provide.
Life Steps has programs from those little ones all the way up to seniors, right?
Yes.
What do you have? What kind of services at the other end of life's continuum?
Yes. So at our Butler Center, we have our Adult Day Health Service program. So it's a program for seniors that, you know, maybe they're not ready for a nursing home, but maybe they can't stay home by themselves and their family doesn't feel comfortable with them being by themselves during the day.
Both people in a family maybe have to work?
Yeah. And I love it because it allows that senior not to be isolated at home, but be a part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
So they come to the program. One of our mottos in the program is each senior that comes in is greeted with their beverage of choice as soon as they walk in, so that hot cup of coffee if they like it, and their activity of choice, whether they're someone that wants to read the paper during the day or they want that puzzle in the morning. So that's part of that kind of customer care that we have for the seniors.
Is that all take place at the Life Steps, your main headquarters there out on Eberhard Road?
Yep, it's at our main center in Butler. And what's really nice about that is I always tell people that's an intergenerational center. So downstairs we have the seniors and their ADHS program, but upstairs and across the building we have those kiddos. So there's a lot of programming. So yesterday was Halloween. So there were kids down there engaging with seniors in fun Halloween activities. So there's a lot of intergenerational learning from each other.
By the way, I said Eberhard Road. That's probably not the right address.
It's Newcastle. It's on the corner.
Yeah, you're right on the corner there. Yeah. So I was thinking, you better backtrack there, Dave. It's right across the street from Staples.
That's the easiest way for people to know.
Okay. So some wonderful programs. What about your geographical footprint? Carol alluded to that. I know you've been growing like crazy.
Yes. Yeah, so we actually, Carol and I were talking earlier. So at Life Steps, we are across Western PA. So by ourselves, we're at 10 counties. And then you add some other groups and we're over 10 counties. We also have, when you think about our geographical footprint, we have 51 community homes. So the really neat thing about community homes, it's a home in any neighborhood. It's not going to have a Life Steps sign on it, but it's for an individual with intellectual or developmental disabilities that maybe their family can't care for them. And maybe they might have been institutionalized, but instead they have 24/7 care to where they're living their life to the fullest, where they're going to the grocery store, where they're engaging in activities, where maybe they're getting employment. So they're really wonderful. So there's 51 of those across all those counties. And then you add our other early education centers and our adult training facilities, and that's 63 different facilities where we're helping people thousands each year.
Wow, growing indeed. Now is your main headquarters still here in Butler?
Yep, so our main home, we started in Butler in 1923, and that's where our heart is, where we started to grow, and now we are reaching individuals in need across Western PA.
So I don't want to give the impression that there are Life Steps programs for just the little ones or just the seniors. You cover the whole range of life. You have family services, right?
Yep, so we have family services. So here in Butler County, we actually have a program called Families Forever. So for a family that might be struggling with divorce or separation, it's a great program. It's a Saturday seminar where parents or family members can come and learn about how to communicate well and what's best for the child. So it's a really great seminar for families that are struggling with some changes in their lives and wanting to make sure that their children are in a safe and happy place as those changes happen.
My guess is that most parents that are in that situation, whether it's separation or divorce, have no idea how to broach that subject with their kids.
It can be a hard thing to discuss, yeah. And it's a hard thing as an adult to tell people. So you can only imagine having to maybe explain to a five-year-old that mom and dad are getting a divorce.
Hmm. We'll take a quick break. We'll talk a bit more with our guests. Life Steps, headquartered in Butler, but now covering 10 counties in western Pennsylvania. It's amazing. Selected as the Next Tier Bank Spotlight Nonprofit Agency of the Month for November, and we'll talk a little bit more about what that means in just a moment or so. One of our sponsors on the program today is the Butler County Symphony. Their second concert of the season already is coming up this weekend, Saturday night, at Butler Intermediate High School Auditorium, and it's themed around the Great American Songbook. The concert will include selections from George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue and from Porgy and Bess, also by Gershwin, of course. There'll be songs from Cole Porter. How could you have the Great American Songbook without Cole Porter tunes? Irving Berlin, numbers from Jerome Kern, Henry Mancini, and Harold Arlen. What a night, what a concert. Soloists include Drew Peterson, the 2017 American Pianist Award winner, also two vocalists, Kate Amatuzzo and Patrick Team. The concert follows a week of educational outreach programming in several school districts in the area, as 25 members of the symphony are going around from school to school, along with the maestro Matthew Kramer, presenting 30-minute assemblies to the young people. Music appreciation. And by the way, there'll be a pre-concert lecture by maestro Matthew Kramer at 6:30 Saturday night. I'll give you a little preview of what you'll hear during the concert. Concert time is 7:30. Ticket availabilities, check with the symphony office on the Diamond in downtown Butler or online at butlersymphony.org. Butlersymphony.org. We're chatting with Cassandra Kokoski. Cassandra is Director of Community Relations for Life Steps. Also with us is Carol Oshensky. She is a Senior Vice President for Next Tier. What does Next Tier do to help not just Life Steps, but any nonprofit agency who works with you, Carol?
Absolutely, Dave. We try to do our best to really showcase that agency throughout our branch network. The main idea is to share their events, share the goodness that they have and they're providing to the community, but also then share with our customers the joy of buying our chocolate-covered pretzels. And all the proceeds then go to the nonprofit of the month. And it's amazing how many of our customers like those chocolate pretzels. And, you know, obviously then the rewards go back to the nonprofit of the month. Every month we choose a different nonprofit. The only requirement is that they are a customer of Next Tier Bank. And we are now expanding. It used to be when we were smaller, we had one nonprofit of the month. Now we have different regions, so we have two, but Life Steps actually covers Armstrong County, so we're actually choosing Life Steps for both our Butler County branches and our Armstrong County branches. And then going next year, we're actually going to have another spotlight nonprofit for our Southern Western branches. So we're going to have three different spotlight nonprofits of the month because we want to showcase as many of these nonprofits as we can.
Yes, not only is Next Tier expanding its footprint, or Life Steps expanding its footprint, Next Tier is as well.
Exactly, you know, and this is a great opportunity for us to share the good news of the local nonprofits within those communities.
I know branches in Butler County, Armstrong, Westmoreland, and Allegheny. Did I get them all?
Westmoreland, Armstrong. Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Yes, you did. Very good, Dave. Yeah. Yeah, so
I get a gold star.
You do get a gold star for that. And also just to applaud our employees. Our employees are allowed to wear jeans on Fridays, but they have to contribute. And the proceeds from the jeans, they also go to the Spotlight Nonprofit of the Month.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit more with Cassandra before our time expires here about services through Life Steps. Some folks might not be aware of everything that you do. You mentioned identifying speech and language and hearing problems. So what happens after that's identified in a person of any age, actually?
Yeah, so then they're provided with connections to like a service coordinator who might then be able to get them speech or language therapy, behavior therapy. There are many organizations that provide that. Life Steps is one of them. So we have speech and behavior programs that the wonderful thing about that at our agency is so for maybe a family that their child's in preschool, we have that in-house. So then the parent doesn't have to come pick them up and go to another appointment, that it can really be done in-house in coordination with the teacher and the family. So it's really trying to connect all those services together.
But the important thing is to identify a hearing problem, a vision problem. Speech, that's usually identifiable because you begin to hear that if there's a problem with speech. But my goodness, there's another area where the sooner you start getting help, the sooner you start getting therapy, the easier it is. There was a wonderful film a few years back about, it's called The King's Speech. The man who has become the King of England, who had we would call it a stutter, or they call it a stammer, that's a word they use in England. And this was just as World War II was getting underway. And they were desperate because the king was going to have to speak on radio. And they didn't want people to be discouraged because of his impediment. I don't know whether you've seen the movie or not.
Yeah, it's
outstanding.
A great movie.
Oh, it's fabulous.
Yeah.
It's a fabulous film.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, he was able to handle that with therapy. And even, he was an adult, obviously. He was in his 30s, 40s.
Yeah, we have, so last year, of the children that we graduated from preschool to kindergarten, 43% of them that started with an IEP, which is an individual education plan, so for a child that may have behavior or speech or kind of graduated to kindergarten without needing an IEP plan in kindergarten.
Mm.
That's amazing progress, and that's, like I said, part of that foundation of making a difference is that it can start early and it starts young, and you can lay them on that foundation for a good future.
We were obviously scratching the surface in our limited time here. How can people find out more about what's available through the wonderful Life Steps program, Cassandra?
So they can obviously go to our website, www.lifesteps.net, or they can follow us. I always encourage people to follow us on Facebook or Twitter because we're constantly posting updates, things about different activities going on in the programs, ways to get involved. Or you can call our main number, which is 724-283-1010.
Mm-hmm. Life Steps. And please don't forget, next Tuesday, for goodness sakes, it's less than a week away, Election Day. Life Steps teaming up with Rotarians once again for the wonderful benefit pancake and sausage meal. I can't say breakfast or lunch or dinner because it's all day long. You can have it whenever you want at Tanglewood Center. Wonderful program. And by the way, the food is excellent. I go every year.
It is. Those Rotarians are expert at flipping pancakes and cooking the sausage. They're amazing.
They are, for sure. And did you say the sausage comes from local?
Miller's Meats,
well,
yes.
Well, then, you know,
every
it's going to
be
good. Yeah,
even
absolutely
better.
Carol Lashinsky, what if people want to find out more about Next Tier Connects and you know what you can do for nonprofits.
Absolutely. It is available on our website, which is www.nexttierbank.com. We have a 1-800 number on our website that they can call. The 1-800 number is 1-800-262-1088, and just tell them that you want to learn more about the Spotlight nonprofit, and they'll direct you probably to me, and you know I can share and give all the information that they'd like.
It's a good program. Hey, yes. Thanks for being here, folks.
Thank you so much, and thank you again, Carolyn, Next Tier Bank.
Oh, it's our honor. Thank you.
I have this incredible hunger for pancakes and sausage. All of a sudden. It's inexplicable. I'm not sure what it is. Our guests, Carolyn Shensky, she's a senior vice president at Next Tier. Cassandra Kokoski is director of community relations for Life Steps. We still have more to come, folks, so please stick around. We'll take a break here, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with historian Harlow Unger about, it's my guess that most of you have not heard of this guy. He was a French playwright who was actually pretty critical at one stage in the American Revolution. His name is Beaumarchais. Ring a bell? Yeah, I didn't think so. No. We'll find out all about him from Harlow Unger. Coming up in just a couple of minutes here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
The Butler County Republican Party stands united in our support of our candidate, Ben Smith, for mayor of Butler, who won the vote of our citizens in the primary election. I'm Larry Thompson, and I share our party's enthusiasm for Ben Smith, who will bring a strong financial management background, strategic planning, and a focused commitment to the resurgence of our city's vitality and prosperity to the mayor's office. He will work diligently in cooperation with council and all community members to effectively position Butler as a county seat to be a business hub for Butler County. Please vote for Ben Smith for mayor on Election Day.
Paid for by the Republican Committee.
Welcome, listeners, on this segment of the It's Your Turn program here on WISR. First of all, my name is Dave Malarkey. We're going to be chatting on this segment with Harlow Unger, who is the Distinguished Visiting Fellow in American History at George Washington's Mount Vernon. He is a veteran journalist, and he is the author of a book entitled Improbable Patriot that we want to chat about. It's the story of a French playwright who saved the American Revolution. Wow. First of all, Harlow, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
I'd like to start off by having you help me with the pronunciation of this French playwright, because my French is very poor.
Well, his full name was Pierre-Augustin Caron de Beaumarchais. He's known to most people simply as Beaumarchais, and he was arguably France's greatest playwright, the author of The Barber of Seville and The Marriage of Figaro, both of which were later turned into operas and are still very popular operas in throughout the world, and especially in the United States. But Beaumarchais was far more than a playwright. He was absolutely incredible character, a combination of the Scarlet Pimpernel and the Count of Monte Cristo. He was an inventor, a brilliant inventor, musician, singer, actor, publisher, swordsman, a spy, a diplomat, and an advisor to kings. He was an advisor to both King Louis XV and Louis XVI, although he had nothing to do with advising Louis XVI to have his head chopped off at the guillotine. Beaumarchais, though, was born a commoner and was this brilliant inventor. He invented a miniaturization of a simple, a basic part in most clocks. This miniaturization allowed the development of the wristwatch. He was the inventor of the thin wristwatch that can be worn on people's wrists.
Huh.
And it was such an amazing invention that the king and queen Marie Antoinette wanted one, as did all of the nobility in France. So he suddenly rose to fame because of his wristwatch. However, he was a commoner and was treated rather rudely by most aristocrats at the Palace of Versailles. And this is where he developed his sympathy, deep sympathy, for the common man. And indeed, in the Barber of Seville, the barber asks his lord, what did you do to earn so many rewards, to get so rich, to get such wealth, rank, and position? You took the time to be born, nothing else. Apart from that, you're quite an ordinary man. Well, that was blasphemy in an age of divine right of kings, where aristocrats and royalty thought their position was a gift of God. So his play was banned, and as a result, he developed a great sympathy for the American patriots who were rebelling against the British crown. And he came up with an idea for setting up a dummy corporation that secretly bought surplus French arms from the French government. It had to be secret because France didn't want to go to war with England. But he came up with this plan and started shipping arms to what is now the United States, to the Continental Army, George Washington's Continental Army. And by the end of the Revolution, Beaumarchais alone had supplied 80% of all the weapons, the arms, and ammunition of the Continental Army. Without him, they never would have won the war.
Listeners,
his first shipment arrived in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, just in time to save the Americans at Saratoga and turn that battle around so that we scored the great victory at Saratoga.
Listeners, this is a fascinating story. I dare say that the majority of our listeners have not heard this story before. I mean, I've studied the American War of Independence at some length. Of course, anybody who does is aware of the French connection, if you'll pardon that horrible phrase. But we know of the name that most of us would think of, I suppose, is the Marquis de Lafayette, in terms of a Frenchman who helped Washington during the War of Independence. In fact, here in our town, just north of Pittsburgh, in the city of Butler, we have an apartment complex known as the Lafayette Apartments, named after the Marquis de Lafayette.
Well, you also happen to mention the name of a book I wrote called Lafayette, which is quite a very good seller a few years back. It's still on the market. And it's simply called Lafayette. But Lafayette was a different story. He came as a soldier to fight, as an officer, to fight in the war. Beaumarchais never came to this country. He simply set up a company to provide the Continental Army with the arms and ammunition it needed to fight the British. You must remember that the British Army was the largest, best-equipped, most best-trained army in the world. And in America, our soldiers were a bunch of farmers with muskets, single-shot muskets. So they were no match for the English. And indeed, the battle, the British Army was coming down from Canada and was about to wipe out the vestiges of the Northern American Army at Saratoga and split New England. They were going to continue down the Hudson to New York and split New England from the rest of the colonies. And it was just fortunate that the first shipload of arms from France, from Beaumarchais, arrived in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and were carried overland by farmers and other volunteers to Saratoga just in time. The Americans were out of arms, out of ammunition, and were about to be wiped out. And that turned the war around. That provided our victory at Saratoga. And yes, you're right that most Americans don't know about Beaumarchais. He is mentioned. If you go back to your history textbook, you'll see a brief mention about Beaumarchais and his role. Usually it's only about a paragraph and easily skipped over, easily forgotten. And that's exactly what Congress did. Congress was broke after the war. It was broke during the war, and it never paid Beaumarchais for his arms. The original deal was that the Americans were to load up the, once the arms got over here, they were to load up the empty ship with tobacco and other produce that could be shipped back to France for Beaumarchais to sell on the open market and therefore cover his costs of providing arms. They never did, and it wasn't until the 1830s that the Congress finally appropriated $3 million, which was next to nothing, for Beaumarchais' daughter to pay for the arms and ammunition. He had provided over $100 million worth of arms and ammunition.
Listeners, we'll talk more about this fascinating story. And, of course, if you're interested in delving deeper, I'm sure many of you will be, you'll be interested in Harlow Unger's book entitled Improbable Patriot, The Secret History of Monsieur Beaumarchais, the French playwright who saved the American Revolution. We'll continue our conversation with Harlow Unger right after these words. Is there someone in your family who is starting to have difficulty hearing? Maybe it's you, or a spouse, or a parent. You might suggest that they look into perhaps getting some help. We would certainly suggest personalized one-on-one care from Hearing Aid Service by Kelly. Hearing Aid Service by Kelly. We'll give you a phone number here in a moment or so. There are lots of people who have consulted with Kelly, and they are so very happy that they have done so. She will take the time to make sure that everything is the way you want it, from a hearing standpoint, obviously, and also comfort. A lot of people get a hearing aid, and they don't wear it because it's not comfortable. It hurts. No problem with Kelly. Hearing Aid Service by Kelly. Your hearing aid will be measured to fit your ear and yours alone. She'll take the time to make sure that everything is just the way you want it. Listen, folks, Kelly is interested in helping you to hear better. She is not interested in selling you the highest-priced hearing aid. In fact, you'll save thousands because there's no overhead. Complimentary consultation, that's the first step. So many people who have made the change or consulted with Kelly are so happy that they did. Call the hearing aid lady. Here's the phone number. 724-756-4327. 724-756-4327. Hearing Aid Service by Kelly.
Music is a bridge between the material and the spiritual. My name is Harvey Lauer, and I'm 82. As a blind person, you have to be aware that nobody can tell you what you can or can't do. You really have to try things. My folks got me a little radio in 1940, and that was the best Christmas present I ever got. When I was 11 years old is when I started to play music, play the piano, and then the accordion, and then the cello. My wife, who was also blind, was a good cook. When she died, that's when I started Meals on Wheels. America, let's do lunch.
One in six seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at AmericaLetsDoLunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, listeners. Great to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program on WISR today. Dave Malarkey is my name. Our guest visits with us by phone. He is author and historian Harlow Unger. We're talking about his book, Improbable Patriot, The Secret History of Beaumarchais. The book is available, I'm guessing, Harlow, everywhere that we buy books these days?
Yes, indeed, and online at Amazon.com and at BarnesandNoble.com.
Was there, you mentioned that the Beaumarchais' work, his plan had to be secret because France didn't want to go to war with England. There was still bad blood, I'm guessing, because it, after all, when you look at history, it wasn't that long since the English had defeated the French in what amounted to the Battle of North America, what we call the French and Indian War. So there still had to be bad blood, right?
Oh, exactly. The French and English had been at war since 1066, after on 1066, William the Conqueror, his real name was Guillaume le Conquérant. He was a from Normandy, and the he led the Norman troops over to England and defeated the English at the Battle of Hastings in 1066. Then in the 1400s, 1300s and 1400s, the British came back and occupied more than a third of France. So the French and English had been at each other's throats for centuries and centuries. They were consummate enemies, despised each other. And in the Seven Years' War, as it was really called, and it was the first true world war, that was the real world war. It involved a dozen nations and millions of people on in Europe, in North America, in Africa, and in Asia for control of all those colonies. And that war ended in 1763. It lasted from 1754 to 1763. And the North American phase, as you said, was called the French and Indian War. Before that, France controlled all of Canada, all of what we call now the Louisiana Territory, which stretched from the Appalachians all the way to the Rockies and down to the Gulf of Mexico. All of that was called New France. And in 1756, the British defeated the French and seized all of that territory and kicked France out of North America. So France was seething by the time the American Revolution began. France was also broke, but it saw support of the rebels in America, support of the patriots. It saw that as a way of weakening England. But France couldn't afford to go to war with England, and along comes Beaumarchais with this wonderful scheme that he takes to the king, and he says, all your old cannons and weapons and arms and everything, they're obsolete here in Europe, but the Americans can use them. They're fighting in the woods, and they need all the guns they can get, all the ammunition they can get. So he made a deal with the king to take that stuff off his, the surplus arms off his hands, set up a dummy corporation, and ship them over to the Americans in exchange for tobacco and other produce, that wheat and things like that, that could be sold on the French market.
Yes,
and that's how the deal got going. No one knew that France was involved, and they were involved only unofficially.
We forget, when you were talking about New France, we forget the size of the territory that was controlled by France. The English really had just the Atlantic seaboard, based on the claims of you know, people like La Salle and Marquette and Joliet and all of the other early French explorers. They controlled the majority of North America at the time, before
absolutely.
The Seven Years' War.
The English only had a tiny little strip of land about 100 miles wide from east to west and 1,000 miles long from north to south. The rest was all France. And indeed, when we declared independence, we invited the Canadians to become a 15th state, and they refused because they were at each other's throats between the French and the English.
I have to tell you about a little bit of local history, Harlow, here in western Pennsylvania. There's still, of course, a French influence. In fact, Fort Pitt, now Pittsburgh, before it was Fort Pitt, was Fort Duquesne because it was a French fort.
Absolutely, and Duquesne was the French Governor General of Canada. That's how it got its name. And that's how George Washington got started. He went to, he was a lieutenant colonel in the Virginia militia, and Virginia claimed all the territory up to the Great Lakes, and he went out because the English settlers were trying to settle in areas claimed by the French. He went out with to Fort Duquesne and asked the French to leave, and they refused. So he went back there with some troops and was soundly defeated. The British Army sent over Braddock and some British troops, and they too were defeated out there. There was a lot of battle for Fort Duquesne.
One other local note, you might be interested to know, we had a local historical commission just a few years ago here in, we're in Butler County, just north of Pittsburgh, and they set out to determine by using the journals of George Washington and his guide, Christopher Gist, and they wrote copious notes They marked his trail as he passed through western Pennsylvania on that trip. We now have these wonderful historical markers along many of our roads in this area, noting that George Washington passed through here as a very, very young man. He was only in his 20s then.
Yes, most people think that the war in North America began in New England at Lexington. No, it began out there in Pittsburgh, in what was then Fort Duquesne. That's really where our War of Independence began.
I'm looking at the dates for Beaumarchais. He died in 1799. I know from my limited memories of history classes that the French, following the success of the American War of Independence, the American Revolution, the French Revolution came not all that long after. Beaumarchais died in 1799. What's the timeline? Did he live to see the French Revolution?
Oh, absolutely, and he was a part of the French Revolution at first. In a 19th century dictionary written about 30 years after he died, the listing for The Marriage of Figaro, Beaumarchais' play, the listing for that play in the dictionary is one of the causes of the French Revolution. He was really one of the fathers of the French Revolution before the terrorists took over. He was in favor of setting up a constitutional monarchy obviously nationally. He wanted a model like the United States had formed. Mm-hmm. Of course, he lost. He survived the French Revolution and went on to write more plays. He was the most popular playwright in France. His plays, of course, are still performed both as plays and as operas.
Yes, The Marriage of Figaro and The Barber of Seville, two of the most famous operas. Well, so.
Absolutely. And the fact that he was so many things in so many different areas of life is why I called my book Improbable Patriot, because, as I say, he never set foot in America, but was one of the primary reasons we won the American Revolution against the British.
Relative unknown in America, obviously very famous even during his lifetime, I suspect, in France, eh?
Absolutely. Hailed and as one of the heroes of the French Revolution and as the greatest playwright of his time. His plays, the people would line up for 10, 20 blocks to try to get in to see his plays. They were so popular because they poked fun at the aristocracy and made aristocrats look like unworthy fools who had got their wealth and their power simply because, as he put it in the play, they were born, but they did nothing. As he said, he had to, for him to survive, he had to work hard, and that was how the common man had to survive. So these were plays that lauded the common man and made fools out of aristocrats, and that's why the king banned his plays. There was such public demand that finally they began to be shown, and they became the most popular plays in the history of France.
What a wonderful, wonderful story, unknown by, I dare say, the vast majority of Americans. I mean, look at all that this man was: Beaumarchais, inventor, musician, diplomat, fugitive, spy, playwright. The only thing I can think of that would even compare to him here in that same time in history would be a combination of Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson. Maybe put the two of them together, they would match.
And Paul Revere.
That's right.
He was an amazing man, and that's why I wrote Improbable Patriot. I think he's a character that Americans will grow to love and should love. He really was a hero of the American Revolution as well as the French Revolution.
Listeners, if you're interested, again, the title of the book, Improbable Patriot. In fact, I'm going to let Harlow give you the full title because I don't want to butcher that pronunciation again if you're looking for it. the full title, Harlow.
Well, the real title of the book is Improbable Patriot. The subtitle is The Secret History of Monsieur de Beaumarchais, the French playwright who saved the American Revolution. That's Improbable Patriot is all you need to know to get get the book.
Available everywhere that we get books these days, including the online sites. Harlow Unger, what a delight to chat with you for a few minutes. Thanks for giving us some time, sir. I was delighted for the chat.
I was too. Thank you for inviting me.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 2727. The pick 3, 661. The pick 4, 2541. The pick 5, 73013. The wild ball for each of those is 7. The treasure hunt is 1, 5, 6, 17, and 29. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Thanks to our guests for visiting with us today. Coming up on tomorrow's program, Open Talk to begin with. Also tomorrow, we'll be chatting with the National Carbon Monoxide Awareness Month people. Visiting with us on tomorrow's program.